Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. My Olympian mission is to promote lifelong personal development, human empowerment, out-of-the-box thinking, creative self-expression, and a dedication of one's unique talents to community service. All of my labors in this lifetime celebrate the hero's journey in myth, legend, spirituality, popular culture, and in daily life. I firmly believe that the human spirit is essentially heroic and always seeking ways to express its innate nobility and greatness, and that a life fully lived, dedicated to actualizing the highest we can conceive, is the noblest expression of human existence. Tonight on Age of Heroes, the Elysium Project, I'm proud to bring you Astrid, who will be interviewing Alexandra Charan about her book, Getting Through It. Greetings and welcome, Astrid. How are you?
Greetings, Hercules. Always a pleasure to spend time with you, whether it be at the Amber Dragon in meditation or here, welcoming all of our listeners and exchanging great ideas, some that we know, some that we may need reinforcement. And it's just always wonderful to be with you.
Same here, and I'm really looking forward to your show tonight. If you need me, just holler. I'll be here.
Okay, thank you. And tonight our guest is Dr. Alexandra Charan. She's the author of many books besides the one that we're going to discuss tonight called Getting Through It, Reclaim and Rebuild Your Life After Adversity, Change, or Trauma. Some of the other books she has written, and I say some because the list is lengthy, are 365 Ways to Strengthen Your Spirituality, Crystal Ball Reading for Beginners, Runes for Beginners, Clearing Clutter, Have You Been Hexed, The Ethics and Responsibilities of Being a Psychic, How to Talk to Me After I Am Gone. Alexandra, what a diverse list. Amazing.
Thank you so much for inviting me on the show. Yes, I've written a lot of books. I encourage everybody I know to write books. It's a marvelous process, and you learn a lot about yourself.
Most definitely. And, basically it's like sitting down with a really good friend that you can just bounce ideas off and brainstorm, and you both get such excitement out of it because you're constantly growing from these things. You know, you're brought to another level. When you think you have reached the pinnacle, guess what? You're like, wow, it's amazing. And I have to say, your diverse list is just as diverse as your accomplishments as a person. Chris, an author is only one part of yourself as a person. Seeing a second-generation fortune teller, a high priestess of British traditional Wicca, queen of a coven, professional psychic intuitive, master's degree in teaching, certified in tarot, streaming poker at www.twitch.tv, queen of diamonds. What a wide spread of interest and accomplishments.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I have lived a really marvelous life, and I've picked up a lot of great stories doing it.
Right, and I'm sure all these accomplishments add to the depth of your writing because, you know, you just have so many layers. You know, and I always say, you know, there's some that just don't want to show who they are, what they are. And then there are those who see life as a lotus blossom, just opening. And there's so many layers, and the depth involved is beyond belief. And that's how I saw your book. This book to me was like a lotus flower that just opened and kept opening and opening. And the format, as I mentioned to you before we were on air, was amazing. The way you laid out your intro, got into the book overview, and then got into your chapters, dividing it into sections, which we'll go into in a minute. And then again, giving a glossary and also recommended reading. And I find that so interesting because so often you read a book and you're so intrigued by it and you want to delve further, but it's always I find so interesting when an author allows the reader to see that there are other things that can expand their vision of the topic. So I really appreciated that as well.
Thank you. I'm glad you noticed. I'm a big reader myself, and I definitely stand on the shoulders of all of the people whose writings that I've absorbed and been blessed by in my lifetime.
Right. Now, in your intro of the book, Getting Through It, Reclaim and Rebuild Your Life After Adversity, Change, or Trauma, you share the traumas or your serious life upheavals, if you want to say it that way, that led you to deal with your grief. And I love the line right in the beginning of the book. You will need to grieve the future that you could have had if you did not have to rebuild your life from scratch. That was so profound, Alexandra, because we never think about the future. We're so, you know, when we're dealing with these issues, we're so caught up with the emotion that we're dealing with at the moment that we forget that there's going to be down the road or the end of the forest as our journey and all the weeding here, there, of all the pathways. So I love to read the book starting with that.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it was really important to focus on loss and grief because sometimes we don't understand that you can grieve things besides death. You know, there are many, many types of loss.
Most definitely. And all of our different pathways define the journey. So it's that trip is more important than the end result. All the things we learn makes us who we are. Could you give our listeners a little peek into your events that occurred, the timeline involved of the events that were significant, which caused you to deal with your grief?
Sure. I had kind of a rough.
Hello, Alexandra. We seem to have lost you.
I was just going to say, can you just alert her to reconnect?
If she can hear us. Alexandra, if you can hear me, please try calling back. Something severed the connection. Your number still appears as active on the board, but sound isn't coming through.
So while we're waiting for Alexandra to reconnect, I'd just like to say that this book was a book of experiences, and Alexandra's had a multitude of experiences in her lifetime, as you know, heard me say, of all the different activities
right. And
professional accomplishments she's done. But she also did not write this book to educate people. She was she went through a whole vast timeline of traumas that started in 2014 when a truck crossed the double line, struck the car, couldn't walk assisted. She battled phobia of driving. She gets on her feet after that event. A year later, she's diagnosed with high-risk breast cancer.
Oh.
So you're talking about enduring chemotherapy, having small children. 2016, she had double mastectomies and had 36 radiation operations, lost fertility, ovaries were removed, you know. After all this and dealing and coping with that, she had a husband who she was with for 14 years who basically the marriage ended. She was left to stay at a friend's home with the possessions that she had and had to deal with divorce trauma. And she's led a very full life in terms of her capabilities and what she can do and what she's done. And she was a hospital chaplain. She went through a lot of witnessing of people's traumas.
I think
so.
Try to get her now.
Great, great.
Hi, Alexandra.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
It
seems like we had some connectivity issues. I can hear you on the other end.
Right, I did.
Couldn't hear you either.
But you know, I'll tell you right now, I just went through that timeline with our listeners, which started in 2014 with your accident, You're dealing with that, and then you move on. 2015, being diagnosed with high-risk breast cancer, chemo, radiation, then and you had little children. 2016,
yes, I had
double
a
mastectomy. Oh, wow. How old?
3-year-old and a 5-year-old. So they were very young. And yes, it was very tough for the whole family, for sure.
Sure, sure. And, of course, as a mom, because we always see ourselves as roles, you know, within our roles, you know, we want to do the best for those that we are nurturing and care for. And here you have to take care of yourself as well. And I just finished, before you were able to get back on air, saying that after all this, your husband of 14 years gets up, leaves, and you're forced to move out, sell the home, just take what you could. And you
I felt like
that.
Cancer took everything from me, and I had lost so much all at once. So I just wanted to tell everybody who's been going through a lot of losses that you're definitely
right. And you end that intro with this other line that I found amazing. One can be healed and still suffer, just as one can die happily far too early. It's like amazing because, yeah, you know, we've all seen people that went on and on. It was a very lengthy process. And the one who'd had no time to deal with the grief because it was an instantaneous death, you know, very different approach to dealing with it. And talking about all these different occurrences in your life, it brings to mind the fact that we define ourselves by our role so often. And that had to be very difficult for you because you had multiple roles that were affected. So can you tell us a little bit about how that impacted?
Absolutely. You know, I really strongly identified myself as a wife and a mother, and I felt so angry and betrayed and hurt and devastated to have those roles changed. Because when I got divorced, I was no longer a wife, and it was through no fault of my own, but I felt this profound sense of loss of identity. And, you know, having to share custody of children now, it means that I had to understand myself as more than just a mother.
Right, right. And the other thing that was very interesting is that it was such a shock for you because you were young, 34. You had no family history of breast cancer. You were healthy. You're a marathon runner, breastfeeding your children, you know, and that's what they always tell you. These are really important factors. Whereas, you know, as I was growing up, I was always had that in the background where I'm probably going to get breast cancer because every single female on my mother's side has had it. And I have to say, at this point in my life, I have outlived all of those women that did have it. So, yeah, there is no formula. You can be expecting it, and it doesn't happen. And here, being so healthy, you never saw it coming.
Yeah, it came out of the clear blue sky, that's for sure. And, it can happen to anyone. So many people, they say things to cancer survivors that can be kind of hurtful. They can say, oh, well, did you smoke, you know? Did you eat a plant-based diet? You know, all kinds of things they might say. And it can be hurtful because it seems like you're blaming the victim. But people say it because they want to believe it can't happen to them, you know. But I'm living proof that cancer can strike anyone.
Wow. Now, with the overview of the book, you divide it in chapters according to the 5 stages of grief as defined by the Swiss psychiatrist Kubler-Ross in her book, Death and Dying, which was published in 1969 originally. And I thought it was interesting because the 5 are like denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. And then within denial, you have avoidance, confusion, shock, fear. It's not just one thing. There are like little offshoots. It's like the adjectives of the noun, anger, frustration, irritation, anxiety, bargaining, struggling to find meaning, reaching out. Depression, being overwhelmed, feeling helpless, acceptance, exploring options, new place in your life and moving on. Does everyone experience all of those aspects of grief? do you expect them to occur, and in that order?
That's a good question. So the Kubler-Ross stages of grief are no longer thought to be scientifically accurate, but they're very pervasive in our culture, so much so that most people expect to proceed through them, you know, in a nice orderly fashion. But those of us who have been through the journey of grief know that it's more like the hero's journey. You know, when Hermes was saying at the beginning of the show, or Invictus was saying at the beginning of the show about the idea that we're all heroes journey. It's like these stages of grief are the threshold of fear. You know, we have to let go of something that does no longer exist. And in doing so, we go through a lot of confusing emotions, and a lot of them are thought of as okay in our culture, especially for women. You know, anger is a no-no, and it can be very difficult to understand that you can zigzag through all of these different stages, and it's you need to really work with them in the order that they arrive at you in the moment.
Right, right. And then there's something called external, and then there's something called internal struggles. Can you elaborate a little bit about the difference between the two of them?
Oh, well, I mean, sometimes that can be confusing too. It can be difficult to understand where your internal experience ends and your external experience begins. As an example of that, you know, when I went through my divorce, I felt a sense of betrayal because those closest to me were suddenly no longer a supportive influence in my life anymore. And it felt like this was happening to me, you know. It felt like everyone in the world was a potential betrayer, right? But it wasn't really an external thing happening to me. This sense of hurt and of loss was something that was happening internal to myself. And the ability to trust had to stop trusting myself.
Very true, very true. And before we get into each stage, I would like to address how you approach the book in each chapter. I found it so interesting. As you describe each element, you talk about choices. You insert personal stories to emphasize reactions and the choices without getting lengthy. So often when we're reading a book, you somehow lose track of the original thought because the author goes off to emphasize something, whether it be a personal story or an example of something, and just rambles on. And then the reader gets to the point where you're saying, wait a minute, like where you get so wrapped in the story that you forget the original intent. And you navigate the stormy seas as they occur and the aftermath. Now, why did I use that terminology, Alexandra? To give an example of the visualization that you use within the book, as you're telling stories or you're giving choices or talking about a technique, you will give a visual sentence. It's words combined with pictures which create a lasting impression. It's a great way to learn, and it's a great way for people to retain knowledge that you don't have to go back and say, well, what was that all about again? You know, so I have to say that was, you know, kudos to you. Great approach, format, magnificent. So as
Thank
we get
you.
Into the
yeah,
first
I,
chapter,
I tried to keep it bite-sized for sure. And I kind of have a behind-the-scenes story about the format as well. When I first wrote the book, my publisher actually asked me to write it because she, you know, my editor said, you've been surviving this amazingly. Can you give some wisdom to our readers? And at first I wrote it as kind of a daily devotional, you know, like a daily thought. And so I wanted to write 365 ways to deal with grief and loss and traumatic life events. But as I wrote the book, I found out I had to expand it to something more because I realized that, you know, you can't just progress through these stages in a linear fashion. And so that's why I made it in kind of these bite-sized chunks that are easy to digest.
Yeah, and you did it, though, very effectively, I may add. Very effectively. Because it hits home, and you're like, wow. And then you're ready for the next part. So, denial. How does it affect oneself and the others around you? Sharing of horror stories. Why do you think people do that, Alexandra?
Well, people want to connect their life experiences with your own. And sometimes they don't understand how hard that can be. Now, just to give a little context, when you're saying sharing of horror stories, this is a concept that every cancer survivor familiar with, which is that when you tell somebody that you've survived cancer, they immediately want to do a story about someone they know that have died of cancer, which, of course, when you're fighting the illness, is not something that you want to hear, especially on a daily basis. And I think that the reason, you know, people are trying to connect with you, they're trying to connect the dots of their own life experience, and they don't realize what effect that can have on you. And so I began to talk about it in the book to help people set some boundaries around that because it's important.
Yeah, that was excellent. And that's another factor about this book. It is great for anyone who is coping with a trauma. And heaven knows, right now at this point, people have multiple traumas. But I think it's amazing for everyone to read.
Oh, yeah, it's not just cancer.
Read.
I mean, divorce, too. You know, people will tell stories about, oh, yes, my friend got divorced, and, you know, now she can't leave the state with her kids. You know, all kinds of horror stories, you know.
Right,
and I'm also sure.
No, and I'm also sure you also get the, well, you know what you need to do or what you should do based upon whatever they've read or whatever. You know, how do you set a boundary for something like that?
Oh, yes, that's a big thing, especially for cancer. Everybody has their idea of what will cure it. I had so many people tell me to a plant-based diet, and I was like, well, I've already been vegan for years, and I got cancer anyway. And, you know, there's lots of cures going on. Lemon juice and stuff like that. And it's important to set those boundaries because you got to understand that the place the people are coming from is trying to seize control over the, right? Because people want to believe that if you just do this one thing, you'll be safe. There's no way that the cancer can touch you, right? But the real world is messy and out of control, and there is no way that you can control these things happening to you. And so you have to make peace with that uncertainty and then set boundaries with those people who are not yet ready to make peace with uncertainty. You can't force them to make peace with uncertainty.
Right. And another thing that's really interesting is that you touched upon the protocol for help because people want to be helpful. And there's different approaches to it, and every human being that's going through the situation deals with it on their own timeline in their own way. So I thought that was great how you got into that. Could you expand upon that a little?
I'd love to. This is something that's big in my house with my children. I always say to them, what is the protocol for help? And they have to recite it to me because it stops a lot of fights between the kids. And the protocol for help is that you have to ask the person, would you like help? And then if the person says no, you have to not help the person. If the person says yes, then you have to only help the person to the extent that they want to be helped. And as an example, I'd like to illustrate, let's say that somebody is living life in a wheelchair, right? And everywhere they go, people see them and want to be of assistance. But that person in the wheelchair might be very capable of doing a lot of things. They might be able to open doors by themselves. They might be able to carry things by themselves. And so when people take away their power by helping them without asking or helping more than the person wants, that stops being helpful and starts being invasive.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And with the denial and getting into the fact you don't want to look at it, you were so right. People, I feel, even no matter what it is, really don't like change. It's so comfortable to live within the confines of maybe the same house, the same job, you know, and with something like this, which is a major change that affects every aspect of your life. I love the one quote you have, it is never too bleak to dream about the future. That was great.
Yes.
You got into traditions that you can still do despite the barriers. But that is a great thing. And talk a little bit about a manifestation list.
Pardon?
Could you talk a little bit about a manifestation list? Yeah.
Oh, yes, a manifestation list. This was actually an idea given to me by my therapist. It's a manifestation list is kind of a positive version of a bucket list. A bucket list has some pretty negative connotations, right? When you say bucket list, it implies that, yeah, we're thinking about mortality here and we're going to die and we need to check a few boxes before we do. But what a manifestation list is it's not associated directly with your mortality. Instead, you are writing a list of things that you would love to manifest in your life. And yes, it may include a lot of the same items that you would put on a bucket list, but it has this positive connotation that you are trying to create space in your life for those things to occur.
Truth, truth. And a modification is so important because, yeah, you may want to climb a mountain, but maybe whatever, you know, trauma you're dealing with, you can't do that. But maybe you can find another aspect or way of doing it or something that can take its place, you know?
Exactly. I always joked that.
So we'll wait for Dr. Alexandra to join us again. And it's just going to be, you know, over here in New Jersey where I am, we've had storms every single night, thunderstorms,
yeah.
and power is always an issue. I don't know if it's the same with you, Hercules. And
here
I had even said something.
We've had thunderstorms, and we've had not major outages, but we've had, like, brief outages as well.
Oh, yeah, we've had both. It's both, and it's just the way it is. And talk about having to make adjustments and modify. I had mentioned to you that maybe I would send questions and I would sort of play it by ear and be flexible with what was going on at this point. Because, you know, there's all different aspects and things that affect what you do, and you just have to be, like, ready how you can cope with them. And coping mechanisms is a big thing in your everyday life, not just dealing with trauma, but dealing with everything. You know, it's not bad
Alexandra,
having a plan.
Dr. Alexandra.
Hello.
Hello.
We're talking about the power outages, Alexandra, saying that, you know, it's affected us in so many ways, and we deal with things the same way. We have to make modifications and realize there's certain things that are just beyond our control. And with the aspect of denial, I thought it was interesting when you talked about how you were raised in a family, you know, and all of a sudden now, the things that you were brought up with, the concepts about, you know, you don't take medications, you don't have to do this or do that, you have to work hard and save for your family, and you know, marriage is last, and all of a sudden, you're dealing with situations where you had to throw most of that out of the window and find an alternative means to cope with what you were dealing with.
Absolutely. Yeah, I always thought divorce would be entirely off the table. I never even gave it a single because I thought that as long as I didn't consider it, then it just couldn't happen. But,
right.
You know, it takes two to make a marriage, and if one person is not going to participate anymore, there's nothing you can do about that, for sure. I had a hard time coming to terms with that. I can definitely say now that divorce is harder than cancer treatment.
Yeah, because you're not the only one making the choices. You know, and it's
yes.
And it's thrust not only on you, but the children as well. And
yeah.
I also liked a lot of that little thought about sand tray therapy. Could you delve into that a little bit?
Sure, yeah, that's a wonderful Jungian technique that's used in therapy nowadays. Now, Carl Jung, of course, wrote the marvelous book Man and His Symbols, which is a marvelous way for you to explore your own human condition and your place in the hero's journey. And what sand tray therapy is it's basically like you're a grown-up who gets to play in a sandbox with toys. And what you do is you start to place small objects or toys or trinkets in the sand tray just where you feel like they're supposed to go. And at the end, you can take a picture of it and really analyze the symbols and kind of explore through this play therapy the major themes that are going on in your life, in your hero's journey.
Mm. Interesting. And as you said, you know, people would discuss things and say, well, maybe if you did this or maybe if you did that. There's also the other aspect, and I dealt with this yesterday with a neighbor. There's no sense in beating yourself up over past choices. And a neighbor was lamenting to me that her son is basically dying of cancer. And right away it was, well, he should never have smoked the way he did. How can you know, it can have happened even if, why say that's why it happened? You can't go back and change it, you know, and that's an important thing. You know, I found that so important rather than beating yourself up. Well, maybe if I did this, you know, it would have worked out, or maybe if I did that, it wouldn't have happened. But that is such an important aspect of dealing with it. It really is.
Yeah. It is.
Amazing.
And nobody deserves to die of cancer, even if they did smoke every single day of their life, you know? And so it's important to disconnect your denial from your sense of whether you should be punished or not, essentially. You don't need to be punished for your past choices, and you can't hate yourself into being a better person.
Most definitely. And as we look towards the second aspect, anger, wow, because you have anger from your own self dealing with your own. You have anger directed at other people. You have people that are angry with you that will not give it a voice because all of a sudden you're not there for them. Talk a little bit about that aspect of anger.
Oh, yeah, anger. I dealt with it a lot. I remember being very angry with one of the staff in the hospital, and now I can't even remember why. I was just lashing out because I was going through this anger. I felt like it was unfair that I was sick. I thought it was terribly unfair that I might be taken away from my children while they were still young, you know. And anger is not considered to be an okay emotion for women, you know, even the language that we use surrounding anger, that it's explosive, that it's fiery, that it's burning, it sounds dangerous. It sounds like something we shouldn't do, right? But anger is okay, and it's a healthy emotion.
Most definitely, because most women are taught to just, well, just put it away, lock it up. It's, you know, it's not going to get you anywhere if you're angry. But anger bottled up for too long has a way of destroying the person that you are. And I love your one line, observe the anger as if you were on the outside of yourself looking in. So great, you know, that's a great way, rather than just to lash out, to stop a minute and pull yourself out of your body.
Yeah, you have to feel your feelings, but sometimes it can be hard to feel your feelings, and you have to go through a few machinations to be able to allow yourself to feel those feelings and know that you're safe.
True, true. And do you think that being short on time is one of the reasons why there is anger, you know, or resentment? Do you think that's an important factor?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the human condition is that we are all on limited time. We're all on borrowed time. That's something that makes the world go round, you know. We probably wouldn't write books and fall in love and, you know, fight for what we love if we thought we could live for a million years, you know. There would be no incentive to do so. But when our time, when we recognize that our time here on Earth is limited, that's when it can become stressful and it puts pressure on us to really grow beyond where we are.
Right, and there has to be some anger, Alexandra, with people and your relationships, disappointment,
absolutely,
the ones that you thought would be there for you and weren't, and those that surprised you by just being in your life when you needed somebody the most.
Yeah, it can be so hard to lose things and people and to let go of people, but not as hard as living a life that's not real, that's not actually there at all. And sometimes it turns out that those people were never really there for you, and you were thriving despite those people instead of because of them.
Truth. And it brings me to a writing that I share with most people. This piece that I read was given to me, and I share it with so many people, a written piece, and it's called There Is a Reason, a Season, a Lifetime. I mean, I don't even know who the author is, but people were just placed in your life, maybe a very short time. I mean, you don't think of that at the moment, or maybe for a particular amount of time, or they're there for you all the time. And then I always think of it as a tapestry. You know, some are woven in and out, and they just keep reappearing when you least expect it.
Yeah. I think that in our culture, you know, we think a lot about soulmates and thinking that a soulmate is like this one person that's out there in the planet somewhere swimming around in the miasma of humanity, and we're going to find that one person and everything will be perfect. But a soulmate can, you could have more than one soulmate. A soulmate might
most
be
definitely
one of those people that was placed in your path to alter your life forever and in a way that you could grow from.
Mm. And ending with the anger, could you make an explanation in terms of a difference? Like, what is the difference with being assertive versus aggressive in terms? And that's what I really think, anger. There's such a difference with it when you think about being assertive, and that's what most people want to do, not aggressive.
Yeah. Yes, assertive means that you are going to be the one leading the action in your life and declaring what you want, declaring your worth, declaring your needs, whereas aggression can mean forcing and trying to either lash out or to force others to bend to your will rather than to acquiesce to your needs.
Definitely. And then there are those who like to hold on to their anger. And there are those who learn through meditation, which is just so amazing, how to release anger. And you get into that and you give exercises how to deal with it and examples, like your mom would bring into a pillow and you would throw things, you would punch the pillows. And I'm, wow, this is great, because there are so many different ways that people release anger.
Absolutely. My daughter likes to angry draw, so she draws angrily. And so we've discovered, I bought her a bunch of charcoal, you know, drawing implements, because she tends to break markers when she's doing her angry drawings.
Oh, that's amazing. Now, the third step, bargaining. I love how you start off the chapter. A Buddhist belief is that everything in life is impermanent. And the idea of impermanence can be frightening. So true. We like things to be the way they are. And what is bargaining, and how do you see it when you're going through the trauma? How does it play itself out?
I find that bargaining sort of dovetails or goes hand in hand a lot with denial, right? Mm. Because the idea is that there's something I can do that I can control that will change the course of events and make things back to the way they were. And when I think of bargaining, I think of moments, you know, for example, in my divorce, you know, where I thought, I said, well, maybe I'll contest the divorce. And so that way, you know, you won't be able to divorce me. And my husband said, well, that's a pretty selfish thing to do. And he was right, you know, but the idea was I was trying to play this game of chess, you know, where I could do something that would stop him from his decisions. And that's not the way the world works, but it's often the way that we think, you know. And those of us who are religious or spiritual will often try to bargain with our higher powers and say, well, you know, if I do this, will you do that? And try and strike a deal rather than accept what is happening as reality.
Most definitely. Yeah, and here's a great visualization that you presented. An arrow to the heart. Amazing. Imagine the case of being wounded by an arrow in the wood. The first reaction should not be to demand who shot it and look for them. You're wounded, and you should find safe refuge and tend to the wound. Pull that arrow out first. I love it. I love it. Great. It's great.
Thank you.
Great.
I'm glad you like that visual.
Unbelievable visualizations, and I don't want to give them all away because they need to buy the book and read it. And there is something about driving on a road between two extreme ditches. I will just throw it out there. I'm not going to go into detail because if you want to delve into this visualization, you know, and find out what it's about, get the book.
Thank you. I'm so glad they appealed to you. I'm so glad
great.
To illustrate concepts in this way.
Right. Yeah, and you give different strategies, you know, like if you're worrying at different points, you know, prioritize on paper. You know, if you're bored, what do you do? You know, the what-if scenarios, you know, and you get into so many different things and ways of looking at it. Now, I love the way you did the fourth one. You called it sadness. The black talk of sadness, you didn't say the word depression, because sadness and people, if you say depression, right away people think of clinical depression.
Yeah.
So, you know, I love the way you did it. And talk a little bit about seeking internal validation.
Yeah. You know, we often seek external validation. That's kind of part of that role confusion, that identity confusion that we were talking about earlier, you know, where I felt so self-important to be a wife, you know. I thought that was an amazing role to achieve in life, you know. And I really, it was an external validation thing where, you know, somebody else has given me this title and now I have achieved it, right? But I'm still the same person that I was. I didn't lose my personhood. I didn't lose my value or worth. And finding that internal validation can be difficult, especially for people who don't want to feel like they're selfish or self-important. But really, our own opinions of ourselves are the only thing that really matters at the end of the day.
Most definitely. And then we have to deal with our sadness, you know, like we put it in the shelf and on the top shelf of a closet and leave it there. I love the way you say, and I love the fact that you put this in an area of the book that it just jumps at you, and then you go into detail later. It's okay to throw yourself a pity party, but you should at least try to give yourself some entertainment and refreshments. That is a great visualization as well as a great thought there, you know, a little balancing act there.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the time, you know, we are dissuaded from, you know, we're supposed to look at the bright side of everything, but honestly, it's okay to say, you know, this sucks.
Exactly. Yeah, give it affirmations. It's happening. You know, it's not something, don't talk about it, this or that. And the practice of withdrawing for the purpose of returning. Talk about withdrawal, because that is a really important thing, and boundaries are important.
Yeah, when I think about withdrawal, you know, I think of like going on a retreat, you know, a spiritual retreat of sorts. And it doesn't have to be to like an island or a forest or a cabin, you know, on the mountains. It can be a retreat into your own self, and it can be a retreat. It can be a sort of spiritual going within, a journey within, where you get to just connect with yourself and your own values and your understanding of who you are. These moments are really important, and I think in our culture we don't value that enough.
True, true. And, you know, I have to insert a little story about Hercules here. When we would do these meditations with him, they would be so phenomenal, Alexandra. We would get to this point, and we would be like, wow, this feeling is phenomenal, whether it had been something that was self-discovery or a method of feeling good about something. And he would say, okay, so when you're going through your day and you just lose it and you really feel, oh, I wish I could meditate, return yourself to that cave of Chiron. Return yourself to that library where the Akashic records are and the pages are like flying by. You know, you can do it. You know, you can just recall that, pull it, and release what you need to release. So, you know, thank you, Hercules. I'm sure many of us are thrilled about that.
And thank you,
Alex. Now, the last step. Oh, you're unbelievable. And people are begging for it to come back again, Hercules. You know, the sessions, in-person sessions. The last step, acceptance. Talk about some aspects of acceptance that people can go through. What do we mean by acceptance?
Well, you know, you spoke at the beginning about how healing doesn't have to mean the absence of suffering. And likewise, acceptance doesn't have to mean the absence of pain. And also, you know, I have to remind people, acceptance isn't something that you reach and then you get a gold trophy and you put it on the shelf and you say, okay, I did the acceptance and I'm done with that. You're going to come in and out of acceptance a lot during your journey. And sometimes it's like something that you just get a fleeting taste of or a fleeting touch of, you know. It's like trying to touch a bird's wing in flight. And it can feel so hard to reach that place. But acceptance is that journey. It is the path. It is the obstacle. And so acceptance is something that continuously working towards and with and within.
Most definitely. And adapting to adversity. Again, you know, you talk about different activities with adapting and columns to evaluate how you're dealing with the problems. And it seems like you're always, you know, readjusting and resetting, you know, the mileage on the car. And there is the spirituality. And in each different sense of spirituality, it comes down to certain aspects of it, and we all have individual ways of doing it. And I love the fact that you say that faith and acceptance together, it's amazing how it works together. So
very
really
true.
Great.
I've had some significant spiritual experiences that helped me really understand the true nature of acceptance and how acceptance can be the ultimate divine thing. I think that's why so many religions focus on things like forgiveness, you know, and
definitely
peace and impermanence. All of these things have one thing in common, and that is acceptance.
Right, right. And you, in that chapter of acceptance, you discuss roles. If you're going to share more or less with people, these are things you work out. Your work life changes, your problem solving and adapting, and it brings me to what we're going through, what we're all going through, what we did with the with COVID, the pandemic, because we didn't see it coming. There's the onset, and it's like this can't be happening, and not even having the least concept of how it was going to affect our lives or everyone else's lives around us. You know, it's amazing. And again, like you said, like health insurance, things like shelter, food, the things we took for granted that we thought were always going to be there. Dealing with grief, there were multiple levels of trauma and grief during this whole process, and it still continues, because as we wade our way out of these murky waters, doesn't mean it's going to be over. And it's same with any trauma, I'm sure.
Definitely, you're constantly evaluating and making life changes. Yeah, when you experience a major trauma, wouldn't it be nice if life just paused for a bit to allow you to process that trauma, and then you could get on with maybe another trauma and just line them up like that? But it's not like that. Yeah, sometimes multiple traumas can happen before we heal from the last one.
Right. And I really want to make sure I touch upon the second half of the book before we run out of time, but the second half deals with how do you pick up the pieces and different strategies with that, gaining the strength and confidence to heal, the whole healing process. I love this one, gaining momentum, going forward, finding aspects that maybe have been the same, but you're doing them in a different way, or some new aspects, the new normal. And that's something we all know about. Yeah, the new normal. Talk a little bit about that second half. Something that really, that you feel was so important to include in that second half.
Well, I think what's important about finding a new normal is really just go back to jump back to denial, you know, and acceptance. You have to work all three of those things at once. I think so many people, you know, feel like their life has been overturned, like a cart that's been overturned, and they spend so much time trying to right that cart, you know, trying to put it back upright again, when they could just go get a new cart, you know? And I think that that's really what we're coming to when we are finding our new normal. We have to let go of the old normal in order to find the new, and that can be difficult as well.
Right, and how people see us too, because how people see us changes, you know, with their expectations.
Yes.
So that's important as well.
Absolutely.
You included so many different kinds of talking about meditation, different exercises, which was phenomenal, because you don't just give one, you give several. And it's something that
I like to think of it as like a Batman tool belt, you know, because people are different, you know.
There you go. There you go.
And, you know, what might work for one person might not work for another, you know. So I have spiritual stuff for the spiritual people. I have writing stuff for the writing people. I have art stuff for the art people. And if one thing doesn't work for you, then try something else in the tool belt.
Do you think that your role as a teacher made writing this book easier, that that's why you gave choices and presented it in the format you did?
Definitely. Yeah, I have a master's in teaching, and one of the things that you learn is that there's so many different ways that people do learn, and some ways just don't work for other people. So you have to give these diverse ways to get the information across and get the understandings across. I think that I will always be a teacher in some form. I mean, it's in my chart, to be honest with you, my astrological chart, so I'm never going to be able to escape it, so I might as well make use of it in my writing.
Right, and then as an educator, you also know about Gardner's, you know, multiple intelligences, and so that when we teach, we try to, you know, I know teaching art for 39 years, wow, and I loved it, I really did, until I, you know, just physical aspects stopped it, and it was time to move on. We all know there's a time to move to something new and expand, but that, and I was lucky to say that I had kids from really little to big, and you got to see their growth. So maybe what worked at one point, like moving out for a child, didn't work maybe 3 years down. Constant adjustment and changes, but yeah, teaching, being an educator, there's different ways of seeing things, you know. You have to look at the total picture of the child and or the adult that you're dealing with, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure every parent can identify with the idea that just when you find a solution for a problem with a phase your child is going through, well, then you're in a new phase. you have to find a new solution.
I'm enjoying this conversation a great deal, but unfortunately we only have 5 more minutes. So I wanted
more minutes.
To share their contact info.
Alexandra, just do a very little recap, something that you feel you need to say about the book, and then I'm going to say something to close.
Okay. Well, I will say something. I've always been really bad at self-promotion, but this book is definitely the most important book I've ever written, and
well,
I'm hoping that it will be the most far-reaching and wide-reaching book that I have written. I'd love to get a copy in every library on the planet, so go ahead and request it in your local library. And if you could go, please support your local independent bookstores. They are hurting during this pandemic
crisis. Most definitely. And do you have an idea for your next book?
Actually, yeah, there's already one in the works.
Ooh.
It's called I'm not sure if the title is what the title is going to be, but it's about mudras. So it's going to be kind of an everyday mudras book for meditating
Wonderful.
And using mudras. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, my final comment, in conclusion, the one word I think of when I read this book was empowerment. Empowerment. You are giving people power, whether it's the person going through the grief or the people that are dealing with grief of a loved one. And my picture that I see when I read this book is one of you. It's a visualization of a lotus, as I said before. It continues to open, showing its depth and all the different layers. And that's how I see you, because this book was so amazing. I really enjoyed the book. I felt that was an aspect that would everything about it could deal with every aspect of a person's life, whether it's your own or dealing with others. So, again, a magnificent book, Alexandra.
Thank you so much for your kind words, and thank you so much for reading it. Every person that reads it, I hope it touches their heart a little.
Most definitely, most definitely. And I'm sure you gave Hercules all your contact info and all the different sites. I mean, you're on a multitude of sites, and you have so many varied interests. There are many ways to reach you.
Absolutely. Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me to come on this show and spend this time with you.
Oh, thank you for sharing, because it's one thing to read the book, but it's another thing to have the author discuss their vision of it and what they felt was important, and to share your life, basically, to share your life experiences so we can see things in a new way and a way that will be helpful for ourselves and to others. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hercules, any final words?
No, thanks to both of you. This was an awesome episode, and I learned a lot from it. And I wish we had more time to devote to it.
Thank you. Me too. It's been a wonderful conversation. I appreciate you guys listening and sharing your ideas.
Most definitely. You know, pleasure was definitely mine.
So thanks again, and thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you called in, whether you clicked on a link on your computer, or whether you're planning on visiting the episode on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we will close with Golden Bough by Virginia Acklin.
And they danced. up her cry.